will be on the record. Before we took our recess, I mentioned that in the on-deck circle, so to speak, was Mr. Dan Syroyd. He left a written statement that will enter into the record. And so we'll next hear from Mr. John Lovelace after Janet Mune, if I'm saying that right. You'll help me later. Mun, maybe? Mun, thank you. excuse me. I also want to note that Mr. Don Rees left me, R-I-E-S, left me, left the commissioners a note. And I think the best way to get into the record is simply to read it. He said, I cannot stay. All points I wish to bring up have been stated. I agree with all who oppose the fee for net metering customers. Thank you. And then his name. So we received that statement. Do you desire to give a sworn or unsworn statement, Ms. Mun? Thank you. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you. Please be seated.
My name is Janet Mun, J-A-N-E-T-M-U-H-N, and I'm a Rocky Mountain Power customer and also a net meter user, and I just represent myself and my husband. I wish my husband were here speaking. That'd be better. It'd be better representation. But I want to thank the commission and thank Rocky Mountain Power for your willingness to listen to us for hours. And I ask you to please really consider our feelings, and I think everybody has expressed them so well this evening. We also dumped Blue Sky when we heard that Rocky Mountain Power was thinking of, just even thinking of charging another fee when we were already paying $7.26 plus tax for what we considered our usage. And so I think, and I wrote to Rocky Mountain Power, and they said it's not a penalty. But if people look at it as a penalty, and it makes people not take, you know, invest in solar, then it's the same as a penalty in our eyes. So my husband cleans off the snow and washes the panels, and we're just like another customer that we're saying that we just try to get every little ounce of energy out of our solar panels, and we love them. And we track our usage every day. He's an engineer, and he even brought me a clip-on light that was very energy efficient, and we had all the other lights off, and we just used that one right by. I mean, we're crazy. when we first got up, we were so excited that we're just doing our own power and trying so hard. And when we first, we just purchased it last October, and it took Rocky Mountain Power like 2 or 3 weeks to come. And if my husband would have known that you should not have your solar turned on during that time, or you'll get charged both ways. And so I was glad he knew that. He turned the solar off, so we weren't charged for what we were producing and using. So that was very good. And then since March, we have produced 1.3 megawatts over our usage. And we get no compensation for that. At first, when we bought our solar panels, they said, oh, we know this one guy that isn't at his house very much. And so at the end of the year, he got $100 for his extra power. And we thought, whoa, that's awesome. And then we found out, no, we have to pay $7.99 a month. And we don't get, and in March, if we have some left over, it all gets just taken away. And Rocky Mountain Power gets it. And so that seems like it would compensate for our, you know, instead of us paying $4.95 a month extra, when they get, like right now, it's just 1.3 since March, like, so three times that. So, like, they're getting 4.5, say, megawatts a year, just getting it from us. So it doesn't seem like there's a lot of consideration that I'm supplying power to my neighbors and I'm helping with the distribution of power. And the argument about the peak power time seems to be kind of flawed, since that, like, buildings like this one cut their air conditioning at 5 o'clock. And so I think that kind of, if all these huge buildings in Salt Lake City cut their air conditioning at 5 o'clock, That kind of compensates for us who are cooking our meals at 5 o'clock or watching TV. So I think it comes out pretty okay for Rocky Mountain Power. I just would encourage the commission to just listen to us and just to be honest and to stick up for us. And even though it's not a penalty, they say, just realize what, like everybody has said, the detriment that it really puts on people to think that we're going to get charged another fee when we already, we paid $13,000 for ours, and I figured it'll take, when we only use like $26 to $60 worth of power a month, and so I figured it'll take us like 40 years to pay it back, but the point is that we're using solar, and I'm really excited that we are doing that. And if we just had that $13,000 sitting, I figure I get 2.6%, and that's better than in my savings account. So I'm pleased with my power, and I just hope that you'll help us out. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Munn? Thank you. John Loveless, followed by Myron Wilson. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Please be seated.
So I'm John Loveless. I'm a net metering customer, but I'm actually part of Kaysville Power. It's a small, separate company, but I feel kind of like in my garden. I like to get the weeds before they get out of hand. So I don't want the other power companies to get any ideas either. And so I feel it's important to be here tonight. And just a little bit, most customers that have solar panels, they aren't generating 100% of their power. They're just a fraction of their power is being generated. And they still pay for the electricity that they do need, and they still pay the monthly bill. And many others realize the synergies of solar panels and electric cars, and they give up the gasoline costs, and they actually, there's been a couple of people here, and myself included, have electric cars. And the solar panels power that as well. And others even cancel their natural gas bill entirely and just transfer all that energy to Rocky Mountain Power. And my hope is to one day be a net zero in that effort. I'm not quite there yet, but that's my goal. But the argument still remains that is net metering a burden to the power grid? And I am an electrical engineer, and as an engineer, I challenge Rocky Mountain Power to back up that claim with data, as other people have mentioned. They can get their best technicians and engineers, and let's take some measurements. I have 4 years of really accurate data. I keep data. As an engineer, I'm kind of a nerd too, and I have a lot of data about all the power consumption of my house and my cars, and I'd gladly share that data with them if they would like to do a comprehensive study. I'd be more than happy to help. But excess energy from solar panels from residential homes, it doesn't magically travel tens or hundreds of miles back through the infrastructure. Per the laws of physics, particularly these laws called Kirchhoff's current laws, they're taught in high school electronics classes, that energy will travel tens or hundreds of feet to the next nearest load, the next customer. And it isn't, that's just how the electricity works. It doesn't want to go really far if the next load is just right next door. Nearly all the excess energy generated by my home solar array is consumed next door by my neighbors and on my same street who share the same transformer as I do. And almost none of it will even make it as far as the substation 300 yards away. It's all consumed immediately, and any electrical fingerprint left behind by my solar array's power is attenuated so small it's unmeasurable and indistinguishable. It just simply does not burden the grid. It's per the Kirchhoff's laws of current, it won't do that. Residential net metered energy is consumed locally in the neighborhood like good food at a family barbecue. That's just how it works. Currently, net metering customers of Rocky Mountain Power supply a tiny fraction of 1% of all the energy generated. Unlike Germany, last May, during a peak period, they generated 74% of their power from solar and wind. And to the shock of the detractors, nothing blew up. It all just worked out. And it wasn't a burden to their power grid. They have a very, very smart grid. 74% versus our tiny fraction of 1%. We just really have to get with the times. So please don't allow Rocky Mountain Power to enact this fee. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Lovelace? Yes.
Hello, Mr. Lovelace. Would you happen to have a website?
I do, actually. I have a little blog called John Saves Energy. It's kind of my obsession. It's just a thing I do when I don't sleep at night. And I make improvements to my house, and I document the successes and failures, and I publish them there. I've got a stack of cards I just happen to have brought.
Thank you.
JohnSavesEnergy.com. You can... My motto is save energy without sacrificing convenience and luxury. If you're saving energy and someone notices, you're doing it wrong. You've got to do it so that no one notices. That's my vision anyway. That's what I try to live by. Thanks.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Commissioner. I don't have a question, but Mr. Lovelace.
Yes.
Sorry, it's not a question, but perhaps for the benefit of our court reporter. Can you spell, you referred to Kirchhoff's laws of current. Can you spell Kirchhoff
yes.
for her?
You know, the high school kids have a name that I won't refer to, but it's called, it's spelled K-I-R-C-H-H-O-F-F. K-I-R-C-H-H-O-F-F.
Thank you.
Wikipedia has a really good article on it, by the way.
Thank you. Myron Wilson. Followed by Don, I've mentioned Don Reese already. I've read his statement. Stan Holmes would then be next. Thank you. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. Please be seated.
Thank you. My name is Myron Wilson, M-Y-R-O-N, Wilson with two L's. I'm a resident of Salt Lake City, a Rocky Mountain Power customer, and a net metering customer. I'm here just representing myself, but I would like to state what I do for a living because I think it has a little bit of relevance. I'm the Director of Sustainability for the University of Utah, kind of the chief sustainability geek. That seems to be a common thread this evening. And so as the director for that large institution, it's part of my responsibility to help analyze, coordinate, implement programs and policies for the institution, including financial stewardship. And for the long-term implications. And I like to think of it as risk management for future generations. And I think that aspect ought to be incorporated into the decision here. And one of the things that we say to each other as we're looking at various problems and trying to help the institution live its values, which is not always an easy thing to do, but one of the things that we say to each other when we're looking at a problem is that multiple anecdotes are not data. And it's easy to get caught in a trap of, you know, small bits and pieces of information, but without that full cost-benefit analysis, it's difficult to make a decision. So at some point in the future, we may need a revised rate structure. I will grant that. That's something that reflects customers and all of the relevant issues that have been talked about tonight, whether that be peak demand, total use, baseline power production, fuel costs, cost of carbon. You know, the list goes on and on, but the current kind of time of use, distributed production, we don't have a really good cost-benefit analysis to prove that those charges are worthwhile. With this blanket fee applied to every solar net meeting metering customer, we've talked about that, or with every producer, it's sort of a one size fits all approach that may not be relevant. Ms. Johnson, a former regulator, talked about that things ought to be based on averages, and yet the technology is moving in a way that in the future, or even to some degree now, it will be very easy to decide and to understand what the consequences are, at least on a 5-minute intervals of usage, et cetera, and kind of when and where people are using power. So that could come into play. Like several other people, I monitor, track my personal energy use. I don't have the data with the solar net metering where I can say exactly what is available to my neighbors, but I do know what my home base load is for during those months of high demand from May through September. I've calculated that, know all of that information. Have a small system. We deliberately put it at a 10-degree angle, knowing that we would get more production throughout the year if we tilted it higher, but understanding the community needs and that the big demand here in Utah and most places is to have that power be available in the summer. So we deliberately put it at a low angle. That's not reflected in this fee. We financed it personally, no capital expense to Rocky Mountain Power, not reflected in the fee. We already shift our load like many other people do. We don't use air conditioner. The timer is such that from 12 till 8 at night, it's off. It floats at 84. It never gets there, but we don't use major power sources during that time, not reflected in this fee. We have a net annual surplus back to the grid of 357 kilowatt hours last year. We're expecting more this year, not reflected in the fee. But most importantly, looking at our actual usage and during that period of demand, we give back to our neighbors around 2,000 kilowatt hours during that period. And that we're happy to do that. Then in the winter, when there is more base load, et cetera, we then pull from that grid. But the higher price power of during that demand period, we're giving that to the community. We do these things voluntarily because we care about air quality in the community in the future, but with good metering practices and other mechanisms, we think other people would be willing to do it too. And so it's not just that there is a problem with the pricing structure. We think that technology and other structures would be a better mechanism to tackle this problem. So don't rush into that fee. The last thing I'll say is the University of Utah is doing a community solar program, much like that was done in Summit County and Salt Lake County the last 2 years. We've had tremendous response, really kind of overwhelming response by people interested in participating. The only thing that the university gets out of it is renewable energy credits. So we're not taking a cut. We're doing it because we want to reduce our power, the impacts of our power. But the big question that everybody's asking is whether or not this fee, this tax, will be implemented. And I think there's a lot of interest and a lot of people that are holding back because of it. And so they're anxiously awaiting your decision. So thank you very much for your time and your effort today.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Questions? You're excused. Stan Holmes, followed by Giles Larson. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated.
My name's Stan Holmes. I live in Salt Lake City, and I put solar panels on my home last month. I am a net metering customer of Rocky Mountain Power. I'm also a proud member of UCARE, Utah Citizens Advocating Renewable Energy, a group that Mike Rossetti formed in February to challenge Rocky Mountain Power's proposed solar surcharge. Thanks for allowing me this opportunity to share with you some of the reasons I hope you will deny Rocky Mountain Power's request. Several months ago, Rocky Mountain Power argued that its proposed net metering charge was meant to address a fairness issue. Rocky Mountain Power still claims that rooftop solar customers are shifting their grid costs to non-solar customers. One utility spokesman claimed that it's not fair for customers in Rose Park to be paying for solar panels on Park City homes. It came across as a class issue, where rich people in Park City reap the benefits while poor people in Rose Park pay the costs. I wanted to find out how people in Rose Park feel about this. So I went to the Rose Park Neighborhood Community Council meeting on May 7th. There I had a chance to address the council and later speak with members of the audience. I met a man who has 22 solar panels on his Rose Park home. He wasn't aware that Rocky Mountain Power was planning to charge him for that. Several people expressed concern that a new fee would deter other Rose Park residents from investing in solar. No one at that meeting spoke in favor of a solar surcharge. Everyone seemed to think that more renewable energy is better than what we've got now, which is an electrical grid based mostly on burning coal and gas. That Rose Park meeting was the first of many neighborhood community council meetings I attended over a two-month period, west side, east side. As of today, council leaders of 12 Salt Lake Valley neighborhoods have gone on record as opposed to Rocky Mountain Power's plan to impose a fee on rooftop solar. The councils for Magna, Mill Creek, Big Cottonwood Canyon, Liberty Wells, Fair Park, East Mill Creek, Mount Olympus, Canyon Rim, Poplar Grove, Wasatch Hollow, Sandy Hills, and Sugar House are all on record against this proposed rate increase, solar surcharge. If you were to please open a new docket specifically addressing residential net metering, there will be time for more councils coming off summer break to take action urging you to say no to the solar surcharge. In all of the council meetings, I can remember three people who sided with the utility. Excuse me, two worried what would happen to Rocky Mountain Power's coal miners. One felt that RMP's shareholders should be able to maximize profits as they see fit. But overwhelmingly, officers and participants who expressed themselves in the meetings thought it was a bad idea for the utility to remain so committed to fossil fuels, which the majority seem to recognize as a set of dirty fuels that pollute the air we breathe. Utahns increasingly understand the connection between bad air and Rocky Mountain Power. Here are some excerpts from the community council documents. Wasatch Hollow Community Council states, quote, "We're also concerned that Rocky Mountain Power now generates two-thirds of its electricity from burning fossil fuels, plans to remain heavily invested in fossil fuel combustion for decades to come, and justifies its rate increases in part on the cost of expanding and upgrading fossil fuel burning facilities. Such fossil fuel combustion emissions are known to contain pollutants that negatively impact the health, healthcare costs, social and economic well-being, and overall quality of life of our neighborhood residents," end quote. Fair Park Community Council wants the solar charge denied until, quote, "impacts of Rocky Mountain Power's use of fossil fuel combustion to generate electricity have been identified, quantified, and assessed as part of the legislatively mandated costs and benefits analysis of solar net metering," end quote. The last part being a reference to Senate Bill 208. The Fair Park Council thinks SB 208 mandates fairness. Several councils expressed concern that Rocky Mountain Power's solar fee will stifle clean energy development, with Sandy Hills Council stating, quote, "Our council feels that Rocky Mountain Power should formulate future energy expansion that encourages the use of alternative sources of energy and not discourage their use by adding additional charges to these sources," end quote. The Magna Council was more direct. Quote, "We would like to see Rocky Mountain Power provide observable evidence that it has become a 21st century corporation by actively investing in and participating in the development of all available forms of renewable energy production and by weaning itself away from reliance on fossil fuel," end quote. Now, with all due respect to the Division of Public Utilities and to the Office of Consumer Services, it's the neighborhood councils who seem to understand that the way Rocky Mountain Power operates now and proposes to keep operating with solar hobbled is bad for us, and it will remain bad into the future. Neighborhood leaders have a view of social and environmental realities and concern that the DPU, OCS, and Rocky Mountain Power have until now been unwilling to address. I urge the Public Service Commission to expand the parameters of discussion beyond what best suits Rocky Mountain Power's numbers and charts. Finally, a few words about fairness and cost shifting. In the current rate case, Rocky Mountain Power not only fails to give solar credit where credit is due, it also fails to address cost shifting from the utility to our community. Cost shifting that results from Rocky Mountain Power's preferred operating mode, burning fossil fuels. Does Rocky Mountain Power take responsibility for the health care costs that Utahns rich and poor, young and old, have to pay for respiratory ailments caused by utility air pollution? Does Rocky Mountain Power take responsibility for economic costs to its customers when businesses take one look at our smog and decide to set up shop elsewhere? Does Rocky Mountain Power even acknowledge the connections between what they are doing for corporate profits and the social and environmental costs we, the monopoly's customer base, are expected to pay? The answer in every case is no. And in the best interest of all Utahns, the answer should be no to the utility's solar fee request. Please don't allow Rocky Mountain Power to leave rooftop solar crushed under a carbon footprint. A last point. In my attendance at recent Integrated Resource Planning, IRP, meetings conducted by Rocky Mountain Power's parent company, PacifiCorp, it's become clear to me that what brings about utility change is regulatory pressure. PacifiCorp did not build its first utility-scale solar facility until the Oregon legislature applied pressure. Discussions of the new energy plan for Utah swirl within a box circumscribed by threats of tougher EPA regulations. The utility will not do the right thing until regulatory bodies representing the people's best interests apply some pressure. So now it's your turn. Will Utah's Public Service Commission recognize Rocky Mountain Power's solar fee request for what it is, an attempt to nip solar energy in the bud and to preserve its fossil fuel portfolio for as long as possible? Will you agree that solar energy's costs and benefits deserve a more thorough analysis than the utility has thus far provided? I certainly hope so. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. Questions? Thank you. You're excused.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. You're here. Mr. Giles Larson, followed by Stephanie Dolmet Connell. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Please be seated.
Thank you. My name is Giles Larson, G-I-L-E-S, Larson, L-A-R-S-E-N. Live in Salt Lake City. I am a Rocky Mountain customer and supplier as a net metering customer. I don't represent installers, but I am an installer of solar photovoltaic residential systems. And so I wanted to speak to you from that perspective. So there's been a lot of discussion about this concept of a fair share, which I like. It entails a transaction, so there's a give and there's a take. I think we've heard repeatedly from Rocky Mountain Power and tonight from the gentleman representing the utility union about the take. And I think we're all pretty comfortable with that perspective. And we've also heard a lot about the give, what solar distributed solar owners give back to ratepayers and society at large. I want to talk about a specific case, which is mine. I have a small system on my home. It's 2.3 kilowatts, which is only 9 panels. It does cover my production, and then some. It's probably about 125% of my annual production. And I just want to clarify what that means to install a solar system on your house. And for what I do as a solar installer, it means to build the production capacity of the grid. So the grid before my system produced 2.3 kilowatts less. Now, it doesn't add up to a whole lot, but if you multiply that by thousands of people, it does. The current state, as far as I'm aware, in Utah is residential solar owners produce, well, the capacity is 2.2 megawatts. It's a number. Well, what does that mean? Well, a useful comparison is Rocky Mountain Power's recently proposed solar farm, which is also 2 megawatts. So I think it's important for us to realize, as installers and as owners of solar systems, we beat them to it. We already built a solar farm. It's just in little pieces all over the place. So we increased the grid capacity by that amount. And who paid for it? As we all know, when Rocky Mountain Power moves forward with its solar farm, ratepayers pay. When we install solar on our homes, it comes out of our pockets. So that's a cost that's avoided by ratepayers, and that's part of the give. And I think that's really crucial to understand. That's part of the give of solar owners to ratepayers and to society. What does that amount to? It's easy to find out. Installation costs for utility-scale solar are about $2 per watt. It depends on the type of silicon that they use in the modules. So if you multiply that out by the 2.2 megawatts, you get about $4.5 million that ratepayers contributed nothing to, except, of course, voluntarily through the Blue Sky program. $4.5 million. That's a lot of money, and that's only 1/10 of the commercial production capacity. So we're talking about significant numbers here. This is the give. This is real. These are the numbers. So with my own home, what does that come out to? $2.10 per watt. That's about $5,000. So me personally contributed $5,000 worth of energy production capacity to the grid that ratepayers did not contribute to. $5,000. That's a give. So what are the others? What are the other gives? Many people have mentioned the surplus energy production. So every March, if you produce more than you consume, it's wiped out. And what that amounts for my situation, this is my bill in March. this year, it's 874 kilowatts. You can round up. It's about a megawatt, which retail value is about $100. The lifetime of these systems is 30 years, so you times that by 30. $3,000. So you add $3,000 to the $5,000 capital costs. That's $8,000. So that's what I gave. That's what I gave to ratepayers and to society. Voluntarily. It didn't come out of my rate structure. It wasn't hidden in something that I couldn't see. I just did that. $8,000. So what does that mean per year? $270 per year. So if we move forward and the net metering surcharge is approved, that adds up to $56 a year. So that's the take. That's what I'm taking. At least that's the proposal at this moment. So $56 is what I'm taking. $270 is what I'm giving. Sounds like a pretty good deal to ratepayers. So I just want to propose that if we do move forward and approve the net metering surcharge, I would really like it if I could get the balance of my give, which would be $214. Each year after I pay the proposed surcharge. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Larson? Thank you, Mr. Larson. Stephanie Dolmet Connell? She's not with us, apparently. Then David West, followed by Ben Bell. Mr. West? Mr. Bell? Is there any chance they're in a different room, or are those closed down now? Okay. Okay. Michael, is it Buttig?
Buttig.
Followed by James Allred. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Please be seated.
Hi, my name is Michael Buttig, and my wife and I are residents of Glendale, and we are customers of Rocky Mountain Power, and we do have net metering. I initially installed my system 4 years ago and have expanded it twice so far. We've put over $25,000 out of pocket into our system, which has 34 panels and produces 8 kilowatts. And I figure my payback on that's going to be about 19 to 20 years. I find it perplexing that Rocky Mountain Power continues to advocate its Blue Sky program, which seems to be more interested in greenwashing than anything else. Blue Sky depends on contributions from its customers to promote the green image of Rocky Mountain Power. In the meantime, the solar tax that they're pushing would reduce new solar output by more kilowatts than Blue Sky has ever produced. I stopped contributing to Blue Sky when I had my first solar panels installed, and I will now encourage everyone else to not contribute to Rocky Mountain's green image. And we do pay a minimum of $8 a month, even when we consume no net energy. This is our baseline bill, and this supports infrastructure cost. Some years ago, I once had a monthly bill of less than $8 when I lived in an energy-efficient house in Salt Lake City, which didn't have air conditioning. If the minimum infrastructure fee that's included in our base bill is inadequate, it should be increased for everyone, not just the solar producers. There is an energy revolution going on, and Rocky Mountain Power needs to realize this. Utah will either send the message that it prefers to stay in the old fossil fuel-based economy if it approves this tax, or it will move forward. It can either embrace the future, or it can fight it. And in conclusion, I want to mention that my immediate neighbors also have their own solar system. And if a solar-based tax at any level is approved, we will start to consider the option of going off the grid entirely. And I'm sure we're not alone. Even though this would obviously be quite a bit more expensive, it would be worth it to stick it back to Rocky Mountain Power. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buttig. Questions? Thank you very much. You're excused. James Allred, followed by Damian Mora.
Good evening. My name is Jim Allred.
Let's get a microphone for you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner LeVar.
Allred. I'm a resident of Utah, and in my neighborhood in San Juan County, we don't have natural gas. We're too far away from natural gas lines, and so, like many rural communities, small ones, we use liquid petroleum (LP) gas. And electricity, and Utah Power is our provider. liquid petroleum, I don't believe, is regulated, and the charge for the liquid petroleum has gone up astronomically. And we've generally, my neighbors and I, have had water heaters and furnaces run by LP. But with the rise in that, for instance, neighbors were getting $700 monthly gas bills in the winter for their heating and for their hot water and for their cooking. So a number of us are thinking, well, that we can't keep up with this, so let's substitute electricity to do our water and space heating. Knowing full well that electricity is not as efficient in doing so as a gas. I have installed a electric boiler and am heating my home with hot water. And what I intend to do, since that's not cheap either, is put photovoltaic cells on my roof and net meter. And I would certainly not like to have a disincentive to do that. San Juan County, as along with many other rural counties in Utah, are light on jobs, and that's where the poverty rates are often the highest. And to improve our situation with our utility bills and get them into a reasonable level, photovoltaic really offers something for us with the prices going down as fast as they have gone down. So I appreciate you allowing me to testify today. Couple of other points, and that is, I don't know if you read in Forbes today, but Panasonic and Tesla have signed an agreement to produce the largest battery producing facility in the world. They're investing $5 billion, and by, I think this is correct, 2020, they will have a production capacity that will make the same number of batteries that currently exist on Earth in one year. They're looking at sites to do this, and they're narrowing it down to the two I've heard have been Reno and Stockton, Reno, Nevada, and Stockton, California. And I bring it up because all of this is about, apart from my particular need in San Juan County, is about disruptive technology. And the batteries will have a potentially profound impact on a number of things, one of which is, A, my ability to actually buy them and store my electricity and not have to net meter, but also when I'm in Salt Lake and I see the same air pollution we all see and are concerned about, economies of scale that will occur with this level of production of nickel-cadmium batteries could very well drive those battery costs down significantly, and that will make a difference for the sale of electric cars. And at the moment, I assume our problem in our air here is not solely, but largely caused by tailpipe emissions. And to the extent that battery allows us are cheap enough and allows us to store it, we may be able to cut those down by that disruptive technology. Lastly, I worked as an executive in finance and planning for one of the largest corporations in Utah, and a very heavily regulated corporation. And disruptive change is something we had to deal with, particularly in the last 20 years. I'd say that one of the hardest things for us to deal with is the fact that our corporation is very intense into capitalized infrastructure. And we learned when we were in rate setting phases that we were a bit trapped by our fixed costs. To continue to service the cost on those fixed costs on the capital assets was an influence in our raising rates. And yet, if we took some of the disruptive technology that was coming into the market, and there's a lot, and if we adopted it, we would have to start writing down assets. And in the world of finance, that's not a good thing. And I suspect Utah Power is in a very similar situation, huge capital infrastructure in the power plants mainly, and that adopting to this disruptive technology is a real conundrum for them. But that it's the way we have to go, because in almost every example of this type of destructive technology, disruptive, things eventually do go that way. And the faster you can adapt to it, the better. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allred. Mr. Mora, followed by Eric Hoganson. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated.
My name is Damian Mora. Damian, D-A-M-I-A-N, Mora, M-O-R-A. I'm a Rocky Mountain Power customer, not a net metering customer. I am here representing Garbett Homes. I am the energy coordinator for Garbett Homes. And as many of you might know, Garbett made the transition to energy efficiency in solar and renewable energy homes in 2008. We built several energy efficient renewable energy homes. Garbett is in an interesting position because we create hundreds of Rocky Mountain Power customers a year, and we also, we do solar standard in a lot of our homes. So we're also creating a lot of homeowners that may be subject to a fee. We are obviously opposed to the fee. What Garbett does, many people want the energy efficiency and renewable energy as part of their homes, but many cannot afford the additional costs to add these energy efficient measures or renewable energy features like solar thermal, and geo. It can be very cost prohibitive. It has been our goal that through innovative design, we could offer both energy efficiency and renewable energy as standard affordable options to the average Utahn. These features improve the quality of air and quality of life for our homeowners while saving them money. Utah boasts an extraordinary solar resource, and we strongly believe that Utahns should be reaping the benefits of that non-polluting energy. Our policymakers and ratemakers should be encouraging smart, sensible energy decisions that cut down on energy consumption and save Utahns money on their energy bills. A lower monthly energy bill helps take pressure off the homeowner so they can focus on paying their mortgage, and anything that comes up, medical bills. It definitely helps. It goes a long way. Our homeowners are average Utahns that want affordable homes and affordable energy. We simply cannot penalize them for choosing solar. To add a fee now will discourage Utahns from investing in solar when we should be doing everything we can to encourage personal investments in non-polluting energy. I'm very brief. I encourage the PSC to oppose the proposed solar fee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Questions?
That was just a few questions, okay. Your Honor. Thank you. So I'm interested in your arrangement with the eventual homeowners, and just how it is that you incorporate solar into the package. Can you, I'm just curious.
Oh, we offer as a standard. I mean, if someone wants, in a lot of our areas that we develop, you know, if they want a garbage home, it's going to, we built it into the house. You know, we wire it during the construction phase. It cuts down on costs, you know, and they're able to benefit from an energy efficient home with solar. So, does that answer your question? Or
just another question. How is the relationship between you and the homeowner with respect to the solar panels?
It comes so included in the cost. Oh,
sorry.
So we hire someone to install it, and I mean we include in the cost of the house, and the homeowner pays for that. So it's their own. They own that system. Is that? I think that's okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Mora.
Thank you.
Eric Hoganson, followed by Kyle Oram. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Please be seated.
My name is Eric Hoganson. I'm a Utah resident. I live in West Valley City. I'm a Rocky Mountain Power customer, and I am not a net meter customer. My testimony is somewhat biased. I work for a solar company, Solar Tech Solutions. Before working for Solar Tech Solutions, I was in the oil and gas industry for 8 years. And in the solar industry, I make about one-third what I did in the oil and gas industry. But I can sleep at night. So I just wanted to address a few points that I think are pertinent to this debate that I rarely hear mentioned. Let's see. For one, President Obama recently issued a statement about how his energy policies would cause rates to skyrocket, I believe was the term he used. And that's in large part because of tariffs, a renewable energy credit requirement, which exists in some states, but not here in Utah, for now. Should Obama be successful, there would be a nationwide need for renewable energy credits, thus providing a value to them in Utah. Currently, as part of a net meter contract, with most utilities, you need to give up some or all of your renewable energy credits that your solar panels or other renewable energy producer facility would be generating. And right now that's of no value because there's no value attached to them in Utah. But there could be future value, and I believe that Rocky Mountain Power sees this because every year they have a lottery in which they help to fund solar-powered projects and other renewable energy projects, in general about $1 a watt. My solar company recently did the some solar-powered parking structures for Ace Recycling and Disposal, which is a very environmentally conscious company, who, you know, for one, being a recycling company, and two, having a solar system recently installed, and also having a natural gas-powered fleet of vehicles. They have to give up some of their renewable energy credits, because the Rocky Mountain Power helped them pay for it. I believe it was about $1 a watt. It was a 280 kilowatt system, so that'd be around $280,000 that Rocky Mountain Power invested in, essentially purchasing renewable energy credits ahead of time. So it's just a point that I rarely hear mentioned. One more benefit that solar gives that it doesn't get credit for. Or could potentially give, I should say. Another point that I, every once in a while we hear about electric cars and how They're gaining popularity. And without solar, electric cars are not more environmentally beneficial than gasoline vehicles. They, you know, because they're powered by coal. So generally, people who buy electric cars couple them with solar panels in order to have an actual environmental impact by investing in them. I think that, you know, the blue sky has been brought up quite a bit in this hearing, but I feel like the lottery is even more contradictory to this request. If they are investing in solar and encouraging solar directly, I mean, with money, they're not just getting donations from people passively and then passing that on to renewables. They are taking their income and investing it in renewable energy. In order to encourage people to do that, it's contradictionary is too light a term. It's schizophrenic. To on one hand be helping to purchase solar and engaging in contracts with people, and then the next day come around and say, well, we're gonna, you know, ignore that contract we signed with you that said these terms, and we're gonna toss on some extra costs onto that contract without providing any real evidence that's necessary. People have talked a lot about the $8 fee, and I wanted to point out a distinction. Your average customer pays a $5 meter fee from Rocky Mountain Power, and then Rocky Mountain Power has an $8 minimum charge, which means that if you are just a regular customer, you're not experiencing that extra $3 fee. You're paying the $5 meter fee to help maintain the grid, which is the reason for the meter fee, and then an additional $3 to have solar already. They're already paying more to have solar than someone who doesn't. I also want to point out that the argument, I mentioned before how I make less than I did in the oil and gas industry. I consider myself to be a poor person. I also think the argument that rich people are benefiting and poor people are being harmed is insulting. I look at power bills all day long as part of, you know, working for a solar company, and I can't help but notice that businesses use a lot more electricity and they pay a lot less for it. So if we're saying that solar customers have an impact on the grid and should have to pay more, well, then shouldn't those who have the biggest impact on the grid have to pay more? If they, you know, your average business pays between 4 and 8 cents a kilowatt hour, whereas your average resident pays 12 cents a kilowatt hour. They use a lot less power, but they pay more for it. So, again, I feel like there's an extreme contradiction there in the kind of two-faced approach to green energy that Rocky Mountain Power has taken. They have such an opportunity to facilitate a good future for this state and the country. Solar is a good investment. People talk a lot about grid parity. When will solar reach grid parity? It's past it. People don't generally buy from us to have a warm and fuzzy feeling. That's kind of a side benefit, but they're doing it to save money because it does save them money. And that's why Rocky Mountain Power is now investing in solar, not just in the lotto, but also, you know, they've entered into power purchase agreements for major solar farms here in Utah. In 2013, all new power production added to the United States grid was solar because it's cheaper. I believe that it would still be cheaper even without this fee, and it probably wouldn't hurt our business model. But it's just so insulting, and it's such a hypocritical approach to green energy that that I hope that I don't know if externalized costs are something that you gentlemen will be considering in your decision, but certainly they exist. I believe at the beginning of the testimony there was another gentleman who mentioned a study done by the Harvard School of Medicine, which gave a range of externalized costs in general in the country, and said that if power companies were charged for the damage that they're doing by their business model, that our electricity rates would be somewhere between 17 and 39 cents a kilowatt hour. I think that that's considerable. I would I have one more point, and that is that the solar subsidy is often pointed to, that solar has only reached grid parity because of subsidy. However, I whenever that point is made, I notice that it's also never also pointed out that Rocky Mountain Power gets a much, much larger subsidy, and so do most power companies, and have been for 100 years. Subsidies are generally designed to stimulate new growth in business, not to just increase the profit margins of 100-year-old companies that are very successful, and don't really need the subsidy. And also that with a solar subsidy, the financial benefit goes not to the solar company that sold the system or to the solar company, the solar manufacturer that built the panels, but to the consumer directly. Whereas the power company's solar subsidies, many of them go directly to their profit margin. And who knows where from there. I think it's very short-term thinking. There's an old phrase that a true capitalist will sell you the rope piece you're fixing to hang him with. And that's what I see here. Short-term profits being considered as the greatest factor and the only factor to be considered. So I hope that you will deny this rate request and scoff at the idea of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hoganson. Any questions for? You're excused. Time for another recess. Let's see how many we still have with us. I have a number of names on the list, but I don't think Kyle Oram has come forward. So I have, if you're here, would you just let us know so we can have a rough estimate of who we're going to hear from? Don Mignola. Thank you. Michelle Doxey. Michelle here? No? Okay. Sam Raby. David Hopkins. Thank you. Bill Wheeler.
Ray Wheeler.
Oh, Ray. Pardon me. Thank you. Alan, could be Newman or something like that. Starts with an N. Nauman, maybe? No Allens, anyway. Okay. Jeff Loudon. Josh Sherrington? Sherman. Okay. Amy O'Connor. David Nimkin. Thank you. Eric Johnson. That gives us seven. Yeah, so I don't think we'll have a recess now. We'll be in recess until 20 minutes to the hour. Thank you.
Did you count how many that was?
Who's taking care of all those?